Africans at home and throughout the diaspora. Unity is strength. We've got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
We need more unity. Come.
Stop the fussing and the fighting.
Yeah.
Now the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of Umoja, embrace with love.
Yes, let's do it right. This is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield, and we are happy to have you with us sharing this important program this afternoon. So I'm going to make my monologue shorter today because we got some serious things to talk about. I do want to remind you that we have a 34-count felon in the White House. We still have the Gaza genocide going on. We still don't have the Epstein files. All of that on top of every day, Trump is doing something that's illegal, unconstitutional, immoral, unethical, or just plain damn wrong. I know you can't keep up with all of that. None of us can. And there's some things that we don't even know that they have been doing. But we have to slow down this wreck. Why? Because either we're going to be victims of this madness or we're going to be survivors. And I'm for us being survivors. So in order to slow down the destruction, you have to do what? You have to use your voice, your vote, and your dollar. That's how we show our power. And some of us have been doing that on these primaries, showing up, voting, and making sure that the people that we are electing have a vision about a new direction for this country. So I want you to start doing some scenario planning in your household, in your church, in your organization, the what ifs, like the what if scenarios. And so one of them obviously is repression and suppression at the ballot box, but there's some other things as well. So for example, what if the grid goes out? Because this is not just about the MAGA folks. There are other folks who are hacking, as a security issue, the grids for other countries. So what happens if you don't have electricity in your house, in your neighborhood? So I want you to think about those things, because there's no sense of us being caught flat-footed when some of these scenarios, they're even laying out for us. They're telling us what they're going to do. So it's not going to be a surprise. So let's not be unprepared for what's going to happen. And I know it's a bit much on top of all of what you're doing, the high grocery prices, the high gas prices, healthcare being compromised, but we gotta save some energy for our own salvation, our own futures. And the only way to do that is be involved. So that's just me being the messenger. A lot of times y'all don't want to hear the ugly stuff, but if I don't bring it, who will? So today we're going to be talking about Black men and suicide. And so we have some special guests today. One of them hasn't arrived here, and one of them is going to have to be on off screen because of some technical difficulty. But two of the three are here, so I'm happy about that. So we have Erise Williams, who is one of the founders of Williams and Associates. We'll hear a little bit more about that organization in a minute. And then we have Ronnie Amin, who is with Freedom Community Center. So welcome, both of you all.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Good. So one of the... we just launched yesterday the initiative, Black Male Suicide Awareness Initiative. And hopefully some of you all saw that on Channel 4. But this is important because this is something we've been all, I think, thinking about, but we didn't have the catalyst to bring it all together. But it's really a crisis. We are in a crisis with our young Black men, and it's not just about the behavior, is really about the suicide. The homicides too, but the suicides, I think we could probably have a little bit more power over that and some interventions than homicides. But we need to work on both of them because they're forms of violence that are in many ways part of the environment that's perpetrated by the system of capitalism that we live in. So we are always trying to have some impact about that system. So I want to start with I'm going to start with Ronnie, because to talk us a little bit about Freedom Center and what it does, and because you are a newbie compared to Williams and Associates, I'm going to have you go first, and then Dr. Palmer has joined us, and so I'm going to have him do his. So tell us, what is the scope of work that you all do and how you do it?
So Freedom Community Center, well, first, thank you for having me. I greatly appreciate you, and I consider it to be an honor to just engage with you, but to definitely be on your show. But Freedom Community Center, we're a Black-led restorative justice organization, and our mission is to dream of a better tomorrow for us in terms of how we respond to harm and violence. We consider ourselves a restorative justice organization that is centered in abolitionist practices. That means that we would love to employ measures that are outside the scope of the carceral system. We don't believe that our salvation would be found in more policing, more courts, more jails. We believe in community-based solutions. So we've created this beautiful movement of survivors that will meaningfully address harm by, you know, dreaming about different ways of addressing the harm. So we support survivors of violence heal from the trauma that was imposed into their lives due to the violence. That's something that the system does not do. The system says a harm happens and we're going to create and continue the cycle of harm. But our mission is to ask, what can we do not only to address the harm, but to address the conditions that created the harm? So not only do we have this peacemaking solution, but we have a power building solution too. So we can think about the conditions in our community. We can think about the needs of our neighbors and our citizens and learn about the systems that impact us and organize and mobilize our people to address those things that impact our lives. So our two buckets of work are peacemaking, and the other one is power building.
Yeah. And one of the things that I know people associated with Freedom Center always reminds us is that we keep us safe, and it really is about community. We have Dr. Marius Palmer here, and we're going to let you talk a little bit about the African American Wellness Agency and the scope of work it does and where it's doing it, because I know that you all are national now. And so tell us about your organization.
Oh, good afternoon. Sorry, guys. I'm at a golf tournament right now. Another organization, but I wanted to make sure I was on this call and wouldn't miss it. I'm again Dr. Marius Palmer with the African American Male Wellness Agency that was founded in 2004 in Columbus, Ohio. We're in 23 cities now, St. Louis being the 23rd city, and we go across the country doing mental health and as well as wellness health for Black men in America. So we do a wellness day once a year in each city, and we do Real Men Real Talk once every quarter in each city, which helps the men create a space where they can talk about the different barriers that Black men are going through. Also, we have a couple of charter schools also located in Columbus, Ohio.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, that's okay, because if you're outside, you might have more than that swinging at you. So yeah. So I knew that the umbrella agency was older, but how long have you all been in St. Louis? A couple of years?
This is the first year.
First year.
It's our first year in St. Louis.
Okay. So welcome to the problem solving that you're going to have to be a part of.
Hey, I'm here to serve. I'm here to do
okay.
the work.
Okay. Yeah. So Eraz, you the OG on the call. You all are actually going to be celebrating your 25th anniversary next year. So tell us about the scope of work that Williams & Associates has. And it's a lot. And you all have expanded over the years. So talk about it. So I know Eraz was having some technical difficulties. I'm gonna come back to him in a minute. So yeah. So Eraz is with Williams and Associates, and they have a number of services. And I've known them really since probably AIDS and some of the crack cocaine stuff and all of the myriad of what I call the chemical and biological warfare against African American community. So we worked on some issues with that. But I really, you know, we came together yesterday and we talked a little bit about the statistics, and I don't want to bury people in the statistics about Black male suicide. But I think one of the things that people take note of, and we've had a number of, whether it be rap artists, entertainers, sports figures who've committed suicide. And that kind of moves people, but then we move on because there's so much other stuff going on, and we really have not been connecting those dots in terms of like what's happening and why. And if that's happening with people who have resources, when I say resources, I mean money to get mental health care and self-care and all of that, then what is going on with our folks who don't have those kind of resources? And so two of the stats that really stood out for me and very troubling, and one of them is, and it's varying, and we need to get some good stats for the local, but nationally, since COVID, it's almost been a 25 to 50% increase in suicides, particularly among 15 to 24 year olds. Now that's a very vulnerable age, because A, folks are adolescents at 15, they're trying to find themselves, they're sometimes engaging in risk-taking behaviors, and sometimes we don't know what to do with the age group of teens. But then when they start to get to be young adults, then we kind of drop off our radar, and we don't have as much responsibility for them, because we say they're grown, they do what they need to do, they need to take care of themselves, they need to do whoa. So they're lost, and we have not pulled them in. The other disturbing statistic was 1 out of 10 Black high school students have attempted suicide. Now that's too much, y'all. These kids are trying to call out for help to adults who are supposed to be listening and paying attention. 1 out of 10. So you take any 10 young people and put them in a row, one of them has tried to commit suicide. So those are the kind of disturbing statistics that brought the group together that launched the initiative yesterday and had the press conference yesterday. I do want to just talk about what each one of your organizations, the relationship they've had to men in particular who have attempted suicide or who have talked about suicide, and families who are now left with a loved one committing suicide. I'll start with you, Ronnie.
So our focus hasn't been, our approach hasn't been suicide focused, right? Suicide awareness focused, but the scope of the work encompasses that. So we to support the people whom we deal with, we have therapeutic support specialists to help people process the trauma, the harm that they experience, and help them just navigate through life. You know, our people are carrying a whole lot, man, and it's difficult to do so without, you know, being burdened with that feeling of despair, you know? So it does well when people are integrated into community and provided with, like, resources that help them process the ups and downs of life. That's just the typical thing of what we do, but we are also partnered with another organization called Black Men Build. That partnership has started with me. I was once a member of Black Men Build, and I facilitated the men's circle where Black men can come and just unburden. They can talk freely without the fear of being vulnerable, and what we share is used against us. It's truly a heart and soul space, is a safe space. And many men that have come through the doors had expressed suicide ideation. They express about, you know, how difficult it was, man, to manage family life, interpersonal relationships, their romantic relationships, their conflict intentions they may have with their spouse and their children. So we have created a safe space where Black men can come and just freely talk and get supported by other Black men. But the beautiful thing is, we think we're on this journey alone. We think that we're only the only person to experience these harms or these traumas. And imagine how much, there's a word I want to use, excuse me.
No, go ahead. I go to those.
But just how much, just imagine how much of the burden is lifted when you discover that other people are experiencing the exact same thing. So not only do we have space to talk, but people who have went through it are able to share what their experience was. And that is so helpful for somebody who is just battling life, especially one of the young brothers, I mean, the younger brothers. And I remember there was time where we had some young brothers. We used to just keep the group like 18 and up men, because we're talking about serious stuff. We had allowed younger men to come in, adolescents, early teens to come in, and they experienced things that, you know, they found difficulty in. And when they heard the stories of the adults or the other brothers about what their experience was, like, that was like a turning point. And not only now that we just don't have a conversation, but we have what we needed in tribe. We have mentorship. We are building relationship. And that is one of the focuses of what we do as Freedom Community Center. But as what we intend to do with the Healing Circle is to really build relationships, right relationships, that we can support one another on a day-to-day basis and not just in an official capacity.
Well, it sounds like sometimes, even though it may not be a direct service for suicide, you're already seeing the environment that's creating somebody to even think about suicide, and then trying to address that. Dr. Palmer, what about you and the African-American male wellness? Have you all directly dealt with suicide, or are you also just looking at the conditions that create somebody feeling that kind of desperation, that kind of isolation, and thinking, okay, we don't have services for that, but we certainly can create these circles, these places where people can come and talk about what's going on in their lives?
That's exactly what we do. We have an initiative called the Real Men, Real Talk. And it's sort of similar to what the brother just said. We create a safe space for those men to come in and share different things that they can't share, to open up. We also do a mental health screening for the men, and we try to offer services to professionals for those guys that come in and actually take the test and realize they need more assistance than what they're thinking. Most men are taught to hold stuff in, and we try to get it out in those meetings we call the Real Men Real Talk, which is sort of the same, similar to what the guy said, Black Men Build. Kind of the same thing, is just, we just bringing it to St. Louis. I used to do it a little differently with inside of the 100 Black Men, so I'm not with that organization anymore. But we rebranding through the African American Male Wellness Agency with the Real Men Real Talk, which I just held our first one in St. Louis last Thursday, which held about 75 members. Men that came in from the ages of, I think the youngest guy in the room, 15, probably old guys, probably 70. And as you said, those guys, they hear the stories of the men. Me and the owner got to talk a little bit about our stories, and those guys were just mesmerized by the things that, I wouldn't say mesmerized, but just to see that other people have went through things and are so willing to share it in the open to help the youth coming up, but they don't have to go through those same baggage.
Yeah, wow. So, Erise, are you back with us? Okay. So, two things that have happened even since we've done this, the launch, that I know the Organization for Black Struggle sent out a e-blast about the upcoming Community Day, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. And we had people write us and say that they had a loved one who committed suicide. And one that was particularly touching was a young brother. His name is Emmanuel Trotter, and he lived in Allerton, Pennsylvania. This brother, this young brother, 15 years old, committed suicide this year, was a virtuoso, a piano. I mean, his mom sent, I think it's YouTube videos of him playing. This kid got a piano like 2 years ago, and already he was playing Chopin, Debussy. I mean, he had all that stuff down. And so his genius, and just a good looking kid, just friendly. I mean, there were comments made about him. And then you think, okay, why? And this, I think I've talked about this before, that sometimes, well, not sometimes, all the time, suicide affects the whole family. And people are left with questions, with guilt, sometimes with survivor's guilt. And I've even seen this with friends, like, why didn't I see this or why didn't I do this? So there's guilt, there's the stigma of somebody committing suicide in your family, and it's pretty overwhelming, and particularly if you don't have anywhere to go, if there's no services. And so I think one of the things that E-Rise and I talked about is the lack of culturally competent therapeutic stuff for Black families, because sometimes, you know, you get sent somewhere because that's what the Medicaid would pay for, but those folks don't always connect or resonate with your particular experience. The other thing, just bringing all these young men together, is Orlando Harris. People probably have already forgotten his name, but he was the 19-year-old that was the shooter at Central Vision and Performing Arts. This young man had a history of mental health issues for a long time, and nobody really gave it serious thought. So again, I keep saying these young people are trying to tell us something, and we're not listening. So then when they do acts of violence or something that's really incredible, then we like, what, where is this coming from? But I know his parents really did try to get him help. And it was obviously successful because he was killed in that shooting. But the whole school was traumatized. Two schools were traumatized, including students and staff. But and I can tell you, because I was involved in some of the aftermath, that very little sustained resources were given to those folks. And so that again affirmed to me that we don't understand the seriousness of mental health. That's a part of your overall health, and if that's not well, your body's not well, and vice versa. If your body's not well, your mind's probably not well.
I think, like, in all of this, right, so we're talking about, you know, mental health, right, and providing resources, and we're talking about addressing, like, the example that you use, what was a school shooting, this act of violence. But whether we're talking about individual acts of violence, whether we're talking about state-sanctioned violence that happens in our community, systematic violence that has happened to us for centuries, right? Mm-hmm. No matter what is happening in our community, like, we can point to, like, when things happen, we can point to, like, things, and we say individuals should be accountable. But one thing that is missing in our discussion is, like, the collective accountability, the communal accountability, and how do we respond to it as a community? That's the thing. And so when these things happen, there's a lot of fanfare in the moment, but not a lot of sustainability long after.
Right.
How do we deal with it as a community? And I think that is the juncture where we're at. So I'm so grateful of this particular initiative. And it's cool to draw awareness to it, but we need to figure out how we can sustain it beyond the state. We don't need them to take care of us. Everything we have is within the boundaries of our relationship. So it's about relationship building, being in right relationship, and cultivating the space where we're all safe. But it all starts when we value one another. We value the lives of our children. We value our neighbors. We value their property. And we hold each other in high esteem. And that galvanizes us to act and address those things that impact our community. And here we're talking about mental health. And how would it be if we really truly cared? We truly cared for one another. Yeah. Like, that would address so many of our issues. Yeah. Like, if we just cared. And how have I been impacted? Like, I go throughout the course of a day, I'm pissed off at something, I'm depressed. And what does me good is when somebody reaches out to says and asks, how are you doing, brother? Mm-hmm. And hold space for me and allow me to talk. That has not only impacted me, but it's something that I used to employ when I was in a space where I was, you know, I talk about this all the time, but at a time in my life, I was incarcerated. And I was one of those young brothers, those troubled young brothers who committed acts that would not only undermine my future, but undermine the safety of my community. And it landed me in a place. But fortunately, there was brothers who poured into me. They groomed me. They groomed me and really taught me how to be a responsible and balanced man. And these are individuals that were incarcerated. But I had been grown to a person who held responsible in a community. And young men used to look
look up to me and seek me out for guidance and help. And I did what those brothers had done for me, is hold space, hear them out. There are so many crash out moments that I know that I prevented because of the skill set and the care and concern that was given to me at my lowest point. So we need to do the same thing in community. We don't need to wait till they go to prison. Mm. We don't need to wait until some tragic accident or tragic act happens. Like, we really need to do it now. And it needs to be all hands on deck. Mm-hmm. There needs to be an urgency, not just the programming, but, man, just really connecting with people.
Right.
We are so afraid of our young people, man.
Right.
I mean,
right.
we talk about these young people like they're aliens, like they're something else, like they didn't come out of our households. They don't come out of our communities. We birthed them.
I was going to say out of our wombs.
We birthed them, and we created the conditions that impact their day-to-day life. So we have a responsibility to address the conditions, but connect with them in a meaningful way. And it starts by saying, how are you doing, young man? How are you doing, young lady? And building a relationship.
Right.
The approach.
Go ahead, Dr. Palmer. You wanted to say something?
No, I was just saying he's exactly right. So it's how we approach them. No, you can't approach them with always with demand. You have to see where they're at. Ask questions. Let them talk. Let them speak. Nobody lets them voice what's really going on. That's the problem. We don't listen to the children. We just point a finger, or that's a bad kid, or this is that, or whatever. Let's sit down and have a conversation with them.
Yeah. You know, I think, go ahead.
I'm sorry. This is E-Rox.
Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to chime in. At Williams & Associates, we really look at taking the public health approach to addressing the health needs, not only of Black men, but of our community overall. And I think when we talk about mental health and behavioral health, and particularly with our young people, one of our newest aims is really trying to get more young people in the field of behavioral health and public health, because they are going to be the ones who are going to be there for their peers who need that service. And right now, when you talk about the public health field, we are almost absent. I can tell you, when I was at SLU in graduate school at the School of Public Health, I was in many of my classes, I was the only Black person and I was the only male. So, you know, we want to focus on getting more and more young people involved in public health and involved in behavioral health in particular.
I think that's a good point you make. And before I continue with that, I wanted to say to Ronnie about part of the initiative, or goals of this initiative around Black male suicide, is awareness, but that also means a mass campaign of education about Black men, Black youth, and mental health. Because I don't think that sometimes we understand our behavior is triggering, or our behavior is supporting those kind of episodes for people. And sometimes we do it intentionally to hurt, because we've been hurt, and hurt people hurt folks. And so, but we gotta have some ways of interrupting the behavior in a way that's loving, compassionate, but at the same time realizing, I think as you said, Ronnie, the harm that's gets put on communities when people don't understand what they're doing, or they're mad and they're angry, but they don't understand that it's not just, they're not wrecking just themselves, but they're wrecking their family and other communities. And to your point, E-Rox, oftentimes when people like me and Ronnie are talking with these folks, I know that I have limitations. I mean, I can give them hugs, I can love on them, I can do tough love on them, and I have done all of that. But at a certain point, there needs to be a clinical diagnosis, and this person needs to get some other kinds of treatment, some professional treatment that I may not have the skill set for. And so to your point, is oftentimes it's like, well, where do I send them? Where do I refer them? And that's when the resources get meager, because I personally want to put them somewhere where I know the people are going to be there, listen, they're going to do all they're supposed to. They're not just trying to get a check. They're not just trying to bill Medicaid. They actually have a genuine interest in outcomes of this young person, the healthy outcomes. And so how do we get our community to respond to mental health for ourselves, but also for our most vulnerable, and that's the children, that's being exposed to emotional trauma, physical trauma, sexual trauma. I mean, it's just trauma on top of trauma, and we help to perpetuate it because we haven't dealt with our own trauma. So trying to get a community to stop and say, what do we need to be doing? What do you think would be the first couple of things that we would be asking communities to do in support of folks who are in need of mental health services?
Well, I think, as Ronnie pointed out earlier, creating those spaces where particularly Black men can be vulnerable and really address some of those issues that are impacting their lives and have them in situations where they may even be contemplating, you know, something like suicide. We know as a community, I think the first step too is to talk about it, to talk about those issues that you just pointed out. We keep those things in the closet. We're not talking about it. You know, that old saying, what happens, what stays in the house, happens in the house, stays in the house. It's got to come out of the house because it's already out, but we're not talking about it. And I think once we get the conversation going, which is why I'm excited about our event on Saturday, because not only are we offering resources, we're going to be having an opportunity to get the conversation going in the community. It's not just that one event. It's going to take several events like that. It's going to take any opportunity that those of us who have a bully pulpit to bring up the subject, to really start talking about it. Usually when we talk, because I consider suicide a public health issue, and usually when we talk about public health, it's coming from those up high, you know, with the right coats and what have you. But at this point, it needs to come from our community. We need to be the ones to put the message and creating the safe space to deal with it. And really dealing with those myths, you know, in our community about the fact that, you know, we don't do that. It don't happen to us, you know, and at the same time, recognizing when it doesn't happen to us, but it's being labeled as happening to us. I just read an article this morning. There's been 7 hangings in this country, and the police have classified them as suicides. I don't believe it.
Well, Erez, some of them were shootings, like multiple shootings. Okay, how you shoot yourself twice? Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, we have to tackle this thing from both ends. First end, getting awareness in our community, getting our communities involved. Second end, being the watchdog, looking out and being able to recognize when things like that start to happen in our community, recognize what's really going on, you know.
What do you say, Ronnie, are the couple of things that we should start off first with really educating our community about when it comes to really the kind of violence that this self-harm?
Yeah, I think it's difficult for me to address it without, you know, going back to something I had said earlier. And I think the first thing is to consider is how we're all contributing to the condition of our community. How contributing to the conditions of our community and address some of our own things, the things that are happening within our own households, within our own community, and then the community at large.
Ronnie, can I interrupt you there? Because that definitely is my perspective and philosophy that whenever there's a problem in our community, we need to ask ourselves, what part of this do I own? And what part of this can I have some agency over, like what can I do to solve it? And I've had not a whole lot, but I've had some pushback from people who say, well, you letting the system off the hook, you know, that's the bigger problem. So what would you say to that?
Yeah, there is a such thing as, you know, individual accountability, and there is a thing of, you know, community accountability, and yeah, we should hold the system accountable, but we all have agency. Like, we all have agency. We control our own actions and our own thoughts and our own feelings. And we can just think of how we have impacted something or someone. Or we may not even done something, but certainly there are so many areas in which we have dropped the ball. Because the system ain't, you know what I'm saying? The system don't got their hands on our kids day to day. But they will have their hands on our kids. And when they do, we're going to whine and we're going to cry about that. I'm not saying that they don't deserve criticism and critique. I'm not saying that there is an action that shouldn't be held and mobilizing our people against the system. But at some point, you have to acknowledge the things that you have done and the things that you haven't and the things that you haven't done when it comes to whatever issue that is in your community. These are our children. These are our children. So we first have to ask, like, what's going on and how do we contribute to the conditions? And part of the solution is what we're doing now, creating a space where we can come together as a collective and address them. Like, you can never imagine, like, the positive impact just by curating the space, creating the space. I remember, if you have time, I just want to talk about one issue. So I was facilitating the men's circles for Black Man Bill. And there was an individual whom I was trying to get for a while to come on out. And he had finally came out. He was there and he was in such despair. He was hurting. He said it was difficult for him to get out of bed every morning because of the passing of his son. His son had died in this tragic accident that was due to some violence. Somebody was trying to escape the police and they crashed into the car of his family and his family was ejected out of the car. His son was killed and his, wife at the time was paralyzed. And he says he has to carry this every single day. And he's pouring out. The next week, another individual comes and we're talking about responsibility. How do we as Black men show up better in our community? And this guy tells a story about this tragic accident that he rolled upon and he runs to help the family. And as he's talking, the other brother was like, that was you that helped my family? Mm-hmm. And the healing that happened in that moment, like it was, you couldn't script a better moment. Now, the fact that we had this space here, we didn't organize for this to happen, but it happened because we created the space. And I think that it's just important that we just do our due diligence and we create the space. Yes, we do have to have some professionals who could identify some of the things that are happening within the hearts and mind of our young people, but that can come as long as we create the space where it can happen.
Yeah,
it'd be attractive to other people and they can see the work is being done. Yeah, you know, you got some professionals and not to say nobody shouldn't be compensated for their skill set. Some people still got some student loans to pay off. So they deserve to be compensated. But when it touches the heart, people will give up all of that, man, to contribute to the wellness of our community. I've seen it happen. I've seen it happening time and time again.
Ronnie, we could do that for free. That just means us being there and showing up and showing some love. Yeah.
I'm sorry to go on that tangent. That was a thought. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No. We needed to hear that because, like you said, you can't even script that. You can't even, like, choreograph that one. So, Dr. Palmer, what would you say in terms of even what your organization is doing? How are you all approaching the whole issue of public awareness and public education for the Black community?
Okay, I'm sorry if it's a little loud where I'm at, guys.
I was asking what are the ways that we can educate our community about mental health and mental health wellness and well-being for Black men and particularly Black youth?
Well, it's really exactly what the guy just was saying that was just speaking. It's creating these safe spaces for these brothers to come in and actually say what's going on. We do need the professionals, but we all have a different story to share with these people that we have went through. Me, myself, I had the reason I joined these organizations that I'm with and what I am, I too lost a child by the hands of gun violence myself. And it took me a long time to get through it. I had some suicidal thoughts. My son took one of my firearms and shot and killed my daughter. So this is why my story became so strong. It was traveling. I was able to pour into the youngster because I witnessed it. I've lived it myself. So when I come in, it's no professional that can really tell someone that hasn't been through what the people that are speaking on this call have, what we have really been through. So when they see us breaking those barriers, they know that they can as well. So I just pour myself and I give them my all and let them know that it is help out there. And that's what we're doing as an organization and me personally.
Well, I think it's not amazing, but it's somewhat incredible to me that the folks who are in this initial cohort of the initiative have all had like violence or had, you know, thoughts about suicide, but definitely have witnessed violence. And so I know that you're not an anomaly. We are not an anomaly. And
no,
I think about folks, mothers who've had both sons who were killed and a son who killed. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that resides in our families. And to Ronnie's point, it's even more of a reason why we have to have some responsibility and accountability for our children in the home. And even if we can't figure it out for ourselves, to try to make sure that there's somebody that we can call in when little Johnny is like acting up, and maybe there needs to be some other folks who can engage him. So, you know, E-Rise, I do want to talk about the fact that, you know, when it comes to suicide, we can't dismiss the fact that a lot of trans or gender nonconforming people are high up there in the suicide rates. So what, and sometimes these circles don't actually deal with that, because sometimes men have, again, these issues about what a man is. And so I'm not quite sure all of this comes out in those discussions. But what has Williams and Associates, their approach has been to this particular sector of our community?
Yeah, we have tried to create safe spaces for folks who are same gender loving to come and deal with some of those mental health issues. You know, we have a drop-in center called Rustin's Place, named in honor of Bayard Rustin. And that has been, we've been doing that project for at least almost 10 years now. And we have gotten some real good personal testimony from some of the young men who have come through the doors about how having that opportunity to meet other folks who were going through the same thing. Like, I think, I don't know if it was Ronnie or somebody said earlier, you think you're the only one.
Mm-hmm.
Then you find out that there are other brothers out there who are going through similar situations. And in having it so that they're in a space where it's non-judgmental, you know, they feel comfortable, they're not being judged.
Mm-hmm.
And then also giving them tools, coping mechanisms on how to cope from the greater society when these is hitting them with these different issues, you know, in terms of their lifestyle, in terms of their being, who they are, and really trying to deal with that. Because and oftentimes what really stands out for me, and because we were talking about some of the other two guests were talking about having people with lived experience. That is so, so important. And there's nothing that professional people can do. They can't take the place of that lived experience. And we see the same thing when we talk about working with the same gender loving folks, you know, especially with our young people, having them being able to meet other folks who have that lived experience and who learned how to survive and cope. So being able, again, I can't say enough about creating safe spaces, and not only just safe, but courageous spaces, I call it too, because mm-hmm. it takes a lot of courage to say, this is my issue. I need help. I mean, it takes courage to say that you need some help.
Yeah. It reminds me of when Curtis Royston, when he made his comments at the press conference, really, it took me, really deep, is he said that suicide, just thinking about it, does not mean you're weak. It means you're human. And I think about that all the time, because I can't, I have to say that I've believe, I've not done my little survey, and sometimes I do these little unofficial surveys, is that most Black people at some point in time have thought about suicide in their lives. Because the stuff just gets so hard on you, so repressive, that you see that there's no other way out, and it would be better for you, or maybe even better for your family, if you weren't here. And so those are human thoughts. And so if we know that those reside in the hearts and minds of our people, then how do we make sure that folks never get to the point where they feel like, I need to actualize this because nobody really cares? And the isolation, I think you even pointed this out, Eraz, the isolation, the stress, I mean, that's going to be more as we continue out this year 2026 with this fool in the White House. And so I think the stress levels are going to be off the chain. So how are we looking to support each other under these conditions? And so I would just say, not just organizationally, but what to our listeners, what would you ask them to do with people that they see that are seemingly having some a mental health crisis? You know, and there's a range. You know, it might be a small one where they see some behavior stuff, or it might be I'm going to kill myself. Like, what does it mean for them to have to intervene as a sort of lay person?
Yeah, I think making themselves available. You know, when they see this happening, letting the person know that they're there, and sometimes, you know, not coming with the idea that you're going to rescue somebody or, you know,
fix them.
Yeah. But sometimes people just need you to be there and know that you're there and that they're being seen, you know, and sometimes that's just a matter of listening, you know, not coming with all the answers, but just listening and hearing them out, you know, and supporting them. And you'd be surprised how far that goes. Mm-hmm. And I was really touched about a year ago. We had one of the young men in our program, and I hadn't seen him in about 8 or 9 years. And I saw him. He doesn't live here anymore, but he was in town visiting. And I happened to run into him. He came to me in tears. He said, "Mr. Williams, you don't know, you saved my life." Mm. And I'm thinking to myself, well, what did I do? You know, but you'll be surprised, even the smallest things that you do. Mm. To get a person to think something different.
Just different asking approach. The question, yeah. That listening part is really powerful. I know sometimes.
I was just about to say that.
Because Ronnie, there's people that would come to me and say, "I need to talk to you, Mama Jamala, and get your advice." And I just listen, and then they say, "Oh, thank you for helping my. I didn't do anything. You solved that yourself by just talking it through." So, Yeah. Go ahead, Ronnie.
Yeah, no, that was the point. And I think we'll do better with learning how to hold space, learning how to listen. As the brother said, you know, sometimes we want to come with all the answers. And we're meaning well, you know, we have very good intentions. But sometimes that's not the best way. Sometimes it is just listening, just holding space for them. And and then one thing that we have, we said, but I don't think I've heard it, like the actual word or terminology, but somewhere where shame is not present. You know what I'm saying? They don't have to feel shame. That's part of it, man. People experiencing things in life where there's a lot of shame associated with whatever it is they're experiencing or something they have done or may not have done. And they need to know that they can feel safe here. And not hold that shame, that someone won't be judging them. We said non-judgment, but somebody won't be judging them due to the whatever it is that's haunting them, you know?
Yeah. So one of the things that we have going with the initiative is on Saturday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. is a community day for hope, healing, and wellness. And we are inviting, this is a community event that we are inviting with an eye on people who are really struggling with mental health, but really the community is struggling with either their own mental health or watching somebody else struggle. So it really is an all y'all come kind of thing, so that people can, before you have to get confronted with an actual situation, that you're getting information and access to resources, so when it does happen, you know exactly what to do. So that's going to be a Saturday, August 22nd at Northside Movement Center at 5939 Goodfellow. And we'll be there that time. Some of these agencies and organizations will be set up to give you information, to talk to you. You know, we just want to, again, create community. You know, we make community safe, and community is an integral part of healing. So I also know that some of you all have upcoming programs or events that we need to know about. Marius, I know you all got something coming up in September. Ronnie, you all got anything coming up soon, Eras?
Yeah. Well, I do want to make mention about the men's circles. The men's circles we have twice a month, on the second and fourth Mondays of every month at 6 o'clock at 20 South Sarah. You come in, we got meals, we fellowship, and we build. And the facilitator for the circle is this beautiful and well-rounded and grounded brother named Ahasa. And I know that it will be a welcoming experience for the folks. But not only do we hold circles, man, but there are circles and there are spaces where men can meet up all around the city. And throughout the week, you have AMAN, which stands for Articulating, Mentoring, Educating, and Networking. And that's facilitated by the brother Eric Wilson, and he owns ERG Galleries, which is an art gallery. And he has those every Monday at 10 o'clock. And then the last Saturday of the month, you have the men's circle called A Conversation, facilitated by Atoya White, who is a clinician, the brother Yoshi B, and Chris. And they had them on the last Saturday of every month, 1717 Biddle, downtown St. Louis, 11 o'clock. You have the talk facilitated by Black Man Reed. And they have those once a month. So there's so many things to happen. I mean, there's so many things happening, so many things that we can tap into that curate the space for us to engage with one another and promote wellness, healing, and community.
Yeah, and Brother Toya just gave me the dates for those circles. And so we need to somehow put those together so people see it in all together in black and white. And based on their schedule, they can pick one and check it out. Eras, what do you all have coming up?
Well, we have our usual recovery group, Smart Recovery, and this is for those brothers and sisters who are in recovery, not just from substance misuse, but from any addiction. Unlike NA and AA, these particular groups are not necessarily religious based. They're just, you know, ways and tips on dealing with your addiction. From how you can take self-control in terms of dealing with your addiction. We do it every Thursday at 6 p.m. at our South City Service Center at 3030 South Grand, Suite 201. And anyone want more information on that, they can give us a call at 314-385-1935. And that's Smart Recovery.
And E-Rise, I know you all just had a Black Harm Reduction 101 webinar, and I was able to join it for some of it. And then there was a sister afterwards that said, I guess she saw my face, and she's like, I guess people think I'm the curator of all things. But she then reached out to me and said, can you give me the recording of that? Because it was so powerful. And so then I had to hook her up with Adriana so that she gets what she needs. But yeah, so you all have those kinds of open things, both for providers and for the community. So that was powerful. Yeah. Dr. Palmer, what you all have coming up?
September 19th is our first annual Men's Wellness Day here in St. Louis, which will be held at Harris Stowe, September 19th from 7 to 12 noon, 7 a.m. That's our wellness day for the whole family, but we're trying to get Black men healthy mentally and physically. So we'll have all different clinics there to do different testing for Black men, as well as some women testing as well. Yeah. You can bring your children. We have a senior pavilion. We have a kids pavilion. Have a VIP section. It'll all be that day from 7 to 12. Then in November, will be our next Real Men Real Talk.
So I hope you all know that sometimes it's the women folk that get the men folk to these sessions,
events.
Okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay,
yes,
okay. Long as you know.
There's been a number of brothers who had came to the circus when I facilitated, and they were brought there by their wives, sisters,
uh-huh.
and their sisters. There's some sisters who even brought their sons and their nephews.
Right, right.
So you are absolutely correct.
Right, right. Yeah. So we got a lot of work to do, y'all, and we don't want to make it stressful work because it is joyful work. It is like loving work. And so I appreciate all of what you all are doing. And I want people to meet you in person on Saturday, August 22nd over at the new Northside Movement Center. If you haven't been there to see that lovely space, you need to, that'd be the time that you go and see that. If you are looking for any past shows, radio shows, including this one, you can go to JamalaRogers.com and you can see this show as well as any of the writings that I've done in the forever. All of us there in one place. Thank goodness for my beautiful young master of the websites. So yeah, I'm so glad that we all connected. And some of you all know, but Dr. Palmer is going to be new, so I get a chance to interact with somebody new, which is always special to me, because then I know it's not the same people that are doing this work. We're growing and we're expanding, and that's a beautiful thing to see. So thank you all for all that you do, and I will see you on Saturday.
Men on a Mission. Men on a Mission, facilitated by Men Mission St. Louis. The brother Kenny Petty facilitates that as well.
Oh, okay. Okay. So
that's
we got
on
a Monday.
That's on Mondays, right?
Yeah, Mondays at 5:00 Mission St. Louis.
Yeah, I've attended that once.
Okay. All righty. My people, I'm going to end with, you know what, you got your assignment. Don't give up your vote, your voice, and your pocketbook. That's all your weapons of struggle to make your lives better. And so let's do that. This is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield. And I will see you on the battlefield.
Africans
Thank
at
you for
home
listening.
And throughout the diaspora. Unity is strength. We've got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
We need more unity. Come.
Stop the fussing and the fighting.
Yeah.
Now the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of umoja, embrace with love.